background, I'm in the departments of aerospace engineering mechanics and petroleum and geosystems engineering, and got started working in this area. I have to say that Mandry did a postdoc with me on porous media, and so there are lots of relationships between doing some of the biological models that have been discussed here, and those when you're actually looking at, say, bioremediation in porous media. And so, in fact, many of the equations look quite similar, and much of the biology, they're a lot like the Michaelis-Menten kinetics, is quite similar. Anyhow, so this is really a UT effort, and in particular, I want to point out that Xu Yu Sun is a research associate in our group, and he is a chemical engineer and also a PhD in applied mathematics. And then, of course, Mandry Obasekri, who is applied mathematics, but has spent a number of years, probably, I think, last 15 years at the MD Anderson Cancer Center, and so really has a much better understanding of the biology and what's going on and on the physics of the problem. And so she will, we're dividing this presentation up so that you get the best of both worlds maybe. But and then Charles Patrick is has a biochemical engineering or biomedical engineering degree from Rice and is at MD Anderson Cancer Center. So this is kind of, this is an applied mathematician's perspective of why model angiogenesis. One, we've seen this, a lot of this before, formulation of new vessels from existing vasculature, and their crucial biological roles in particular hemodynamics and mass transport, and impacts tissue growth and the fate of tissue survival, and then the effects of molecular diffusion. And here are some numerous clinical indications of where it plays and where it's important. And so one, in looking at this model as a predictive model, that's what basically I do. I develop large-scale parallel computing type models. And so they've been primarily in the area of porous media, but they have applications to, say, like surface water, Darcy flow, and involve really transport reactions and how you would couple, and mechanics, and how you couple these together. And so that's basically how my role plays here. But anyhow, if you look at these models and some of the discussions we've had today, we really require, the word here I like to use is integration. We have to integrate multiple genetic, biochemical, cellular, and physiological information. One, you could have that large data sets if you, from in vitro and vivo experiments. One, you need to, by doing this predictive model, is to build a fundamental understanding of what the process is, and in particular, to permit interrogation of various biological mechanisms, and also to develop better strategies. Now, here, one of the things is the approach that we have taken in this project with the four of us has been the idea of, one, this little cartoon shows a lot of the pieces. In particular, in MD Anderson, they do both in vitro and in vivo experiments. So here, one, coming up with a model, adding different components to it, as well as, I'll talk a little bit more about statistical or stochastic ways of perhaps putting input into this model. But in particular, tying these, integrating both the experiments with theory and with computation. And so here are some of the comments, the way we view this in terms of educational tools. I mean, one thing I can say is that the students that I have, graduate students, and I see a lot of young people here today, is that everyone is very interested in various biomedical engineering aspects or biomedical modeling, because everyone, I guess, in this room has somehow, their life been affected from someone dying of cancer. And so there are particular interests here. Now, I'm going to go in going over more of the details here of the system. I'm going to turn this over to Mandry, and then I will come back and tell you more about the numerical models. Can't see the. I thought this guy was going to put us. Here we go. Oh, I'm going back to mine. No, this
no,
is
no,
yours.
That's
this
that's
is
that's
yours. So she's labeled hers mathematical model, and I've labeled a multi-scale. So here's a, and you page down here. I mean, this is dark.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm a Macintosh user, so PCs are not in my field, so I may move a little bit. Okay, I'm from MD Anderson Cancer Center. As Mary mentioned, I've been there for 15 years and looking at different biological problems, modeling different aspects from cellular level up to system level. So 2 years ago, we started this project on looking at how angiogenesis can be modeled. And you will think because I'm from a cancer center, we were more interested in about tumors. It's not the story. The question started, how can we replace a breast for a patient? And that's where we got started. The reason is when we have, I'm going a little bit into the biology, I mean, the situation among patients. When we treat a lot of breast cancer patients, and many times the breast is resected, one breast is taken off or both, and the patients really want to have their breast implants back again because they don't want to look different, they want to lead a normal life. The problem we're having at the moment, how we are replacing that, is not very nice. In a sense, you know about implants, you can put an implant, or you can use your own tissue from the back or from the tummy and pull it up and sew it up there. So all these things are not very comfortable for the patient, nor it has any it has problems with time. So the question came with tissue engineers, how can we get a breast done for a patient to put it back when the patient has taken its own breast to replace it and it will be its own tissue? We can do it. One thing is to get the shape right, and for that also we have done, we've got stuff that it's like a mold, like a sponge on top. We can, seed cells and grow it. We can do things in a liquid with growth factors, but the time that you put it on is the problem. Okay, so you have the chest wall with existing blood vessels, and you want to bring this and put it together and sew the skin, let's say. I'm just talking in very rough ways, okay? If there's a good biologist here, excuse me, this is not that simple. But the problem is, now for these cells to live, we have to supply nutrients, and there's no vascular system there. So the question is, how can we get angiogenic development to get a good circulation here so that we can get the breast to live, okay? So having that in mind, we started the work. So we are starting, it's a very complex problem how blood cells grow, how they develop, but we try to track ourselves to the way bottom and ask ourselves first. The first question we are going to answer is what I'm going to present today. How can we get the morphology correct, okay, at least to some extent? As you know, the blood vessels are not just going like straight lines, or they are very dendritic pattern. So that is the biggest thing. And before we started work, I'm in the wrong place, okay. This is just a very simple, real tissue here. And this was given by one of our surgeons. We are working with plastic surgery people, surgeons, by the way. So here's a vein loop, vein and artery loop. And you can see the vessels that come down are not just going straight, they're branching and, you know, they're coming back here. So this is the kind of thing we will have from an existing vessel, how new capillary will start. And another more magnified picture is here, and you can see what we are looking at it. If you start like this, how would you branch? How would you loop together? How would it go backward? This is a real picture. All these real little things can we get back from a mathematical model based on some biology put into it, not just, you know, hand waving and making it a stochastic process or anything. It's time now to ask, we know quite a lot of detailed biology, can you use something and get this structure back? So before we started, I should commend, I will stop here because my slide is missing, because I came in a different plane than Mary, so my slide is back home. But I want to mention that long time ago, there was good work done by Megacalis. I know I will not pronounce it right. Worse than mine. No, my name is worse. Okay, Megalakis. Is that right? You know how to pronounce it. Come on. And Laufenberger did a very good one. I'm only mentioning the few people I think I can mention at this time, but there are a lot of people. It's not just we started, okay? But then came the time, I'm happy to see, you know, all the people I'm going to mention except one are here, but Howard Levin and Sleeman had a very good model. In detail, they got into looking at chemotactic and heptotactic. Is that right, Howard? That was the model.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Chaplin and the crowd, I saw Anderson here, they did a very nice thing to get this dielectric system. They discretized. So first of all, it was thought the blood vessels was a flow, and it was hard to get the dielectric formation. And then they went, Anderson and Chaplin and them, they said, okay, we will take the flow, but we will discretize it and put a some kind of a, you know, the coefficient there. We'll change it. Was it randomized, that coefficient? Okay, but whatever it is, stochastic. And then they got quite a good picture. Okay, so now we are proposing another way that we can get this nice picture. Okay, so I'll now go ahead with that. And also, I must mention a recent work by Skalek, and that they used a cellular automata, and they used, in fact, that's the only model I have seen so far that used all different cell types that are involved in blood vessel formation. Okay, so if you haven't seen that, I would recommend you to. But the only problem is their model was not written there. They said they have a model and they show the pictures. So I'm waiting till that is published to see. But they said their site has, but I went to that site, I could not find it. So maybe it's, I did not have the right path. So I don't know. But that's another new thing that's there. But other than that, angiogenesis is being looked at all different angles of blood flow within now. Some people will be talking here. And then also how tumorigenesis is favored by angiogenesis and further embryonic development. So lots of places you have angiogenesis related work going on. So now the way we look at this problem is, the significance of this, as everyone knows, blood vessel formation during tissue repair is important, and that's basically the way we are looking at it. It's a tissue repairment or new tissues put into. And blood vessel formation during tumor growth, that only for the cancer people. When it's needed, we can change this model. I think Mary has a few slides that will show this model can be used even for tumor affected growth. Okay. And tissue survival, that is just like what I said, that is our main idea of having this done, to see whether for tissue survival and how angiogenesis can be changed. Okay, so now what we take is just like in other models, diffusion consumption of growth factors. We would take K care of that as the biological input, and then sprout extension, that means the endothelial cells proliferate and they branch and they get together and make form the network, which is called branching and anastomosis. Okay, so these are the few things that will be highlighted within our model. So here's a little cartoon that we made just to explain a few things for mathematicians, not for biologists maybe. But here is an existing blood vessel. So you walk from here to here, then I'll explain all the details. So you have a receptor, and pro-angiogenic factors, just like the early speaker who was defining about when the oxygen level is low, HIF-1 will be activated, and so down goes, then VEGF gets in, and then it gets to the receptor. And then they will say, okay, time to sprout. Okay, so after getting the receptor activated, then sprouting will start, and the extension will be at the very top cell layer. That is what is interesting. Nothing of these cells will divide anymore. It's known that only the tip cell will divide and extend the sprout. And after the sprout, you can have one or two coming out, and they can meet together. So that means that traveling angle changed in mathematical system meaning, and they meet together and they form a loop. So this is called anastomosis. And this kind of thing is head on to a side of a vessel, and whereas you can have head on to a head, or you can have two heads meet together and make a loop, and one, and it stops there, or it one just keeps going. So things like this can, when meeting the tips, you have different formations. And further, which we don't discuss in our model, is you will have neural cells coming along with it, and of course you know, if the blood vessel, this is, we are only talking here in this model, one cell layer, very preliminary, so preliminary angiogenesis, not to the extent of the tubular formation, what you can see in a normal vessel, because you have to have a hole in the middle for the blood to flow. We are not going to that far, but I think some other people will talk next time. So our main interest was to get the morphology correct, and then we will increase the model to take to the other steps. So why is this mathematically and biologically very difficult? Because we are going through different scales, cellular level, molecular level, so physiology scales. For a cell cycle event, you can go in molecule. You can talk about cyclins and all those that control the cell cycle proliferation, and that would be in molecular scale. And then you get to, if you talk about cell adhesion or decay or cell proliferation and all that, you can get to a cell level. And then if you talk about the ECM modeling and all that, then you get to a tissue level. So if you want to discuss the whole deal of angiogenesis, you have to combine all those different scales. And in the space-wise, cells are very small, 40 micrometers, the length of endothelial cell average. And then if you look at your skin and all this deep, you will go into millimeter level, and of course in the tissue, complete tissue, you will go to centimeter level. Same with the time scale. Time scale will be in microseconds or milliseconds for some of these molecular reactions. Then it will go to seconds and minutes in, for example, signal transduction activation of a cell, just to get a signal through. And then hours and weeks and even months for the other developments. So if you want to think about a breast implant getting all the blood circulation and all that stuff, we will be, you know, comparing all these different scales into that model. So I don't think one mathematician or one biologist or just one person can do all this. So this is a very good example to understand for biomathematical problems or systems biology problems. We need to have groups, just not one or two people. Even this presentation, we try to give as two people just to show you that what I know is so different from what she knows. But we get work together, okay? So here is what we we are doing experimentally, you will have, because we mentioned that we are doing some experiments, and we do on mice, and mainly what we want to see is how the bed starts growing. So we cut the mouse here, take the top skin out, and then attach these little beds here, and then we have to put this big ball on top of the mouse, otherwise he scratches it through. So, and then after weeks we come and take these pieces off and look at where the blood vessels are, and here's the skin, here's the fibrin layer, here's the muscle. And then what we do is we take this and cut it into thin slices. We freeze it, cut it into thin slices, image it, and then put it back together and make a volume rendering. And this is after 7 days, and this is after 17 days of two different pieces from here. And I will show you in a larger scale here, 14 days, sorry. So you can see here the blood vessel formation. Okay, capillary formation. I'm using this word vessel, I should not. This is capillary formation. And after 17 days, you can see like they're becoming vessels. Okay, so this one is the only one we can do for now, but we will get to this level in time to come. And our progress is still there, but it's a lot of work, it's not just small. And then we will ask, how do we do other measurements, like how to know chemical concentrations, all that. For that, we have this model, which we, again, use, by the way, in vivo setup, but we use this shell. This is by the tissue engineers what we do. We have this little Metrigel kind of piece here, where we can insert any growth factor as we want. We can change the density here. We can do anything. So this little piece is put in a, like a hat cover, and the hat is stitched on this and let it grow. So we can control the environment here. And then after some time, we take it out and cut it and investigate. So this is our ongoing work at the moment. And the basic first instance one, so we see this coming and we see the growth, but we are now at the stage of changing this in concentration and checking how things will, the morphology will change according to different aspects of the extracellular matrix. So this is to mimic like the extracellular matrix. Okay, so we have a two-dimensional angiogenesis model. We look at the growth factors and we call it chemotactic growth factors, because as you know, it's not just one growth factor that helps to grow. Even in the morning talk, you heard about HIF-1, HIF-1 activates PDGF, VEGF, all those growth factors. So let it be anything, we just consider growth factors. Later on, we can change them according to their diffusivity, growth characteristics, we can change later on. So we will consider the growth factor to have the dynamics of diffusion, consumption by the endothelial cells, and the natural decay. For the extracellular matrix surrounding the endothelial cell, we will consider it is a heterogeneous medium and also an isotropy on that. Endothelial cell growth, we will consider its movement by proliferation and branching and anastomosis. A big thing that is missing here, it will be the degradation of the extracellular matrix. For the time being, we don't have that here, but that's our first thing next we're going into. But based on these still, it was a handful problem. Okay, so here the model is described with the normal way of describing a, like a growth factors diffuse in the extracellular matrix, and we consider them governed by this PDE, which N stands for a position at a given space point. If it is occupied by an endothelial cell, then N will be 1. Okay. If at a given XY position there's no endothelial cell, this N will be 0. So we monitor the function N with respect to XY and time. And we named it as the capillary indicator function. So If the endothelial cell is there, it will consume growth factors, okay? And if, sorry, this is the place.
The other one.
It's so close to me. Okay, so the endothelial cell will consume the growth factor, that means the binding of the growth factor, and it's at a rate of lambda CTF. So if n equals 1, this binding will be there. If n equals 0, it will not be there. And in the same way here, this is, we assume that in the extracellular matrix, every place, growth factor is produced by the extracellular matrix. So, but if you have a cell there, then that production is not there. And this is the natural decay of the growth factors. And this is how accumulation is governed. So, I've mentioned all this. And the next one is...
Yes. How does the matrix produce growth factors? Like, what are there cells in the matrix that are producing?
Yeah, whatever there is, you know, normal extracellular matrix, it's being produced by other cells and others. So, because we don't have that modeled in, we just let it go, okay? And that can be controlled by later on if you know details. The problem is, you know, all biologists know, but we don't have measurements. So, adding more and more stuff, if you don't have measurements, it's kind of not very good. Okay, so the sprout tip movement is what we really try to model here. The position of the sprout tip is the ith tip is XIYI. The extension direction is determined by the growth factor gradient as well as the conductivity of the extracellular matrix. That's our biggest assumption here. And it's a true assumption, by the way. The extension speed is determined by the growth factor dependent cell proliferation rate. So basically what we're saying is here's a tip of a capillary, and if the growth factor condition is good, it has enough food, it will start proliferating because it got the angiogenic factor to proliferate. And also the direction it goes depends on the extracellular matrix. I will go in detail about the extracellular matrix, and then based on the extracellular matrix, the morphology will change. So the speed of the point is given by the vector U, which is conductivity matrix K times the gradient of the growth factor. So if K is 1, the identity, then you get the condition what some others use, that the direction is proportional to the gradient of the growth factor. And if you have to model fibronectin, then this will take care of the fibronectin. Our results do not, what we brought doesn't have fibronectin. Is that correct, Mary?
No.
Only for you. Yeah. So then the speed of the tip. So this will give basically the unique, this is used to find the unique vector in which direction it goes. And then when we have that unique vector done, then the speed of that tip movement is taken by its proliferation rate. This is the length of the average length of a endothelial cell, and this is the cell cycle time. And having done a lot of cell cycle work myself, we know that the growth factors will regulate the cell cycle time within a range. So this function here, is cell cycle time, is a function based on the concentration of the growth factors. And the way we have put it, I think we have another slide for that. So now the extracellular matrix, the conductivity of the extracellular matrix K is a second order tensor, a function of space but independent of time. So that means what we say is, here I have extracellular matrix, when I start my simulation, it's fixed. With time, with every iteration, I'm not going to change the extracellular matrix texture, which I have implemented by K. So K conductivity, measure of heterogeneity in this matrix. Ka is the measure of anisotropy. And Vx and Vy are local orientation of the ECM. And so if I have Vx Ka equal to 1, you can see that I'll end up with a diagonal matrix and Vx squared plus Vy squared at the diagonal. And we made it such that Vx squared plus Vy squared is 1. Okay, so if it is moving, it will have 1 in that direction, but if it has a diagonal contribution off diagonal, then we will twist. Okay, so that's the way this matrix would work, typical movement.
a very big bookkeeping going on in this new computational side. The position of the individual's sprout tip is X, I, Y, I, the ith tip. So think about, I start with one tip, so I have one to keep account of. Then I break it into two, let's say. Then I have two tips now instead of one tip, new two tips, new birth, new time, new position, and then it keeps going. So dynamically, that bookkeeping keeps changing. Okay, so, and Mary will go more in detail about those aspects. So the position of the sprout tip, XI and YI, you add together and maintain this S of T set, which is all tips. Okay. And whenever we want to know what is the capillary network looking like, you just, what is this, Mary? It's becoming religious, yes. This is a Mac to PC conversion, I'm sure. Okay, so, but I can tell you. I can tell you what it is. What it is you add all the tips backward in time. Okay, so you have, at the very beginning we had one tip, and later on we had two tips, and this. So if you add all the tips together, you get the network. You can visualize that.
If the S is instead of active tip.
No. This S of T, S bar T is what I'm explaining now. S bar T is the network. So you add all the tips backward in time, then you get the network. The capillary network structure is determined by a sprout tip progression, and it is given the function N of F of S bar. So wherever N is 1, that means it's based on the set of points S bar. Okay. Sprout tip extension is modeled by a trajectory tracking system of multiple moving objects. That's what basically it is. So there are multiple moving objects, but we have to keep track of that. So that is the biggest computational rigor in this whole project. Now for sprout branching, what did we do? We said that the sprout branching will happen and give you new sprouts from an existing tip. And the condition for sprout branching, we said the age of the tip. So basically what we're saying is, just because I have a tip and about to proliferate, I'm not going to branch it. If I had branches like that, then everywhere I can see, but it is not seen like that. So we understand that it has an age, or maybe even that, you know, you cannot go beyond several lengths of space. Maybe we really don't know, but we just put this in thinking that this is the closest we can get. So there's an age for branching, and also variation of normalized velocity vector on the transverse direction should be beyond a certain threshold value. Now what that means is, here I have a sprout tip going, okay, and the extracellular matrix says that U vector is in this direction, and my capillary orientation is this way. So if I want to branch or not is decided by asking another question to the transverse of this capillary: do I have a good pull, basically? Okay, then I will branch. If that is not there, if the U, the previous slide, the U vector, if it is pretty close to what I am keeping the direction, I'll go up. I will not branch. Okay, so those two conditions are put in to get the branching going on. Simulation of sprout branching, one sprout tip replaced by two tips separated by a distance DC. If I want to branch, if every condition is fine, then how far should I branch? Okay, so we took the diameter of a normal endothelial cell average, it's like a cylinder, we think, and we get that DC, and then we use that as the distance to put the next two tips, because the next question is how far the two tips should be. And this can be written in a mathematical notation that a little bit before time you get all the tips, and then you consider on the tip set whether we should branch or not, and then you have the new tip set. Because due to branching, you may have a new tip or you may lose that tip, because we can have sprout fusion. Simulation of anastomosis is sprout fusion, tip to sprout anastomosis. That means a sprout tip physically meets another sprout. The tip cell forms part of the loop and becomes inactive. Or we can have tip to tip anastomosis. A sprout tip physically meets another sprout tip, makes a loop, that means both tips become inactive. Or one tip is left and one tip gets inactive. And at that point, to know which one is, it doesn't make a difference because, you know, both tips are the same place. So we just take one existing one. That means our new sprout tip bookkeeping will have one instead of zero.
Can you have like side branching, when you have a tip and like after a while, I don't know if you allow to have a side branching or you...
We left every... Yeah, it's there, you will see. Side branching? Existing vessel? No, we did not do that. We took the existing vessel here and the branch just... That's just a capillary formation. No more existing, we don't have existing vessels. That's what I said. We have existing capillaries. And the branching is only from the sprout tip.
Okay, so they're not side branching.
No. I understood your question. Yeah. No, we did not implement that. No. Okay, so bookkeeping is the biggest part. And sprout extension model as a continuous in time process. We did not do a jumping, we just took a continuous tip movement. And is updated at each tip, at each time point for every tip, according to the extension dynamics, which I mentioned before, that the speed of the travel of the tip is given by related to the cell cycle time, and then the direction of movement is governed by the ECM structure. So the conclusions is that deterministic model of growth factor induced anaerobic was developed. It is very deterministic. We did not have any stochastic in this. Two new concepts were introduced, the capillary indicator function, which precisely captured that network very well, and the conductivity of the extracellular matrix is a new thing we put in. A computationally efficient algorithm, which Mary will now start talking about the algorithm and the numerical simulation aspects and all that. So we have quite good results. We have very nice dendritic patterns and branching, and significantly affected by the geometry. When you change the ECM geometry, we can see the changes. And we see anastomosis, we see branching. And more than anything, what is nice is you have to watch when Mary shows that it has the capacity, the branching goes backward. Okay? Which back again, I would like to show you a picture to remember the real one. Look at this. This one, the branches can move backward. It's not one way down, but predominantly one way, but there are little places which can go backward. Okay. So that's what we like to show what we had. So Mary, you can go from there. Yeah, sure. When you approach the tumor, we see more dense. We have no problem.
So how does that?
Why don't I finish and start, and then you can ask the biological questions to her. You can ask the algorithmic questions to me, and because I think that way I would feel more comfortable, because you can see some of the pictures. I think the pictures tell a lot, and also I have some of the slides that I'm going to comment on, that I'm going to add just a few things, but they will be, there'll be a couple of my slides will be similar to hers, but then I'll go through some applications, and then I'll discuss some of the convergence results. So we do have some convergence results for this model. So let me, if you don't mind, if you'll delay till I, again, this is not, where is this? He was going to put a Oh, here, he was gonna put a mouse here, but he didn't. Okay, this is, let me get this one. Let me get back here. Okay, and here I'm going to start. So let me begin. What I'm gonna do is A, show some computational results. Then I have a couple of slides that are probably somewhat repetitious to what Mandry showed, but I have certain points I want to make about the model. And then show you some of the results that we have. But here is, this case is where we have this extracellular matrix. We have the parent vessel. So here's the underlying, very simple geometry. And so here is some of the computations that, and this refers to, I think, what Mandry was saying. Here you're showing some sprout branching. Here is this backward, which she was referring to. Here's another example of anastomosis. And then here is the CGF concentration at different times. So here's some computations that show some of the features that she was discussing. And then here, here is again where you can see at a later time where you have this non-uniform invading front.
Yeah, the higher the concentration of growth factor, the more capillary sprouts.
That's right. And so here.
Is there a length scale on there? I can't. I'm just, my eyes aren't too good. So when you, on your last slide, well, okay.
Let me start this again.
Okay.
It is.
Yeah, that's fine. No, that's.
So here is just showing the development of the capillary network, and you can see. Here, this is X, this must be meters, 0.0005, I'm not sure. I can't remember what, but you
we went
see.
Up to 1 millimeter. This is showing only up to 0.5 millimeter.
So do you just assume the sprouts off the parent vessel 0.002?
Let me go through the model. And this is just showing what's, and the, this is basically, these numerical results were obtained with certain parameters. There's papers that we can give you that really preside all the parameters that were used in these models, and these parameters actually came from Charles Patrick and Mandry, who have basically based on their experimental results. So again, here is this, shows you another picture of the profile and how it is the CGF concentration. So you can see, in fact, working with this conductivity tensor is something we have done for years in viscous fingering and porous media. I've worked a long time in how when you have inject one fluid by one of less viscosity, how you get a fingering phenomenon. So this is, but anyway, again, let me go through. I do want to say a few words about that, about this, about the model. In particular, and the reason for this is that when Howard gave his presentation this morning, and also Mandry just went through again, this this is a concentration CGF. Now this could be a vector of concentrations. D could be a full tensor, and it could be, for example, D could actually depend upon a concentration. These are very standard, this is a very standard diffusion reaction type problem that one we've modeled a lot in bioremediation in porous media. In particular, you add, can add more complicated kinetics where you have this Michaelis Menten. I've worked with Michaelis Menten for many years. But anyhow, so here we have the mass conservation law for CGF. Also, you could do this, you could add in particular one for fibronectin. But again, in this case, you don't have diffusion. One of the cases, I'll show you some numerical experiments that we've done. Really, the ones we would be showing here really involve molecular diffusion. And this D does, for example, does play a role. capillary network, when you vary D, you have the size of D.
And you lay that D down in the matrix first, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. But presumably D also depends on the local concentration.
Yes, it could. Not in this, let me just step back. We have not done, in these numerical experiments, we have not put D as a function of concentration. But that is not a big deal to do. I mean, this the computational work, because like I'm trying to say, I have done D, unstable miscible displacement has very nasty functions.
Does it depend on position?
Yes, D can depend on position. But most of what we're showing today here is really D is a constant, but it could be on position. It could be a full tensor. That is not a, so basically, in this model, yes?
I was just wondering, does that equation respond to steady state first and then you subtract off what the endothelial cells?
This is a dynamic equation. Everything is dynamic. So you really have some couple PDEs, and we'll see you also can have ODEs, and we'll see some algebraic. So this is being, again, this EN, you saw this equation.
Can you go back to the previous slide? I just want to make one question.
Yes.
When Mandry misspoke and she said when N is 1, in the middle term there, I guess when N is 0, that's the source term for the growth factor.
Well, N is a production term.
Yeah, that's
when N is 0, it's production.
That's the growth factor production.
That's growth factor from the ECF, from the
young. Yeah, right, okay.
Right. And this is consumption, and this is decay, as indicated here. Okay, here, again, this KP also is, I point out, can be non-zero. It's not, there's a threshold concentration. So this is 0 if C is not greater than some C star. So again, I think she went through this with you. So on sprout branching, again, pretty much the same thing. So I'm not going to go over that again. And again on this anastomosis, the fusion of blood, and so here is again some comments about tip to sprout and head to head and shoulder to shoulder, and then this S, which represents a set of active tips, and so again here summarizes basically we are modeling this. Now the CGF factors are modeled on a tissue scale. The capillary dynamics is modeled through a cellular scale. And so in particular, through this KP, we have a way really of coupling both tissue and cellular. We have not put in the molecular component, but you would like to put that in particular through the cell cycle time. So this, the sprout extension, is modeled as a continuous in time process, and then again, here, as Mandry mentioned, P is the sprout tip position. And then here, sprout branching, anastomosis, they're modeled as instantaneous events because of short time scales. So here is your S of T plus. This means basically your total active tips involve both branching and anastomosis. And this depends, this number is going, so this is always the active tips. And so, again, is this S bar, gosh, this looks funny too, doesn't it? Is the union of sprout tips over time. Something, this machine is different than my PC. All right, so those of us, particularly at UT Austin, are not, this is not our area of active research. And so, again, this was our perception and also on our interactions is that what we see different or new here is really this adding of the conductivity of the ECM for the progression of capillary sprouts. And in particular, talking about heterogeneity and anisotropy and the anisotropic properties of ECM. So basically, this sort of thing of using Again, this is a form of conductivity that frequently is encountered by people in porous media, where you look at having breaking up a tensor, of dispersion tensor. So here, our capillary indicator function really describes capillary network structure and replaces this traditional endothelial cell density. So here is what we consider to be the two new concepts. So basically, what we're going to do in our numerical algorithm, we're going to have a two-grid spatial discretization. There is for the CGF. Now, I'm talking about one CGF, but you could have multiple CGFs, and also include fibronectin. So you're going to have some sort of conforming mesh for CGF concentration, and you can have an a posteriori grid for capillary. In other words, you can put in some, this can be adaptively done for treating the capillary network. So here, the diffusion reaction equation for CGF, this is a parabolic type PDE. And what we do is we solve this by an implicit mixed finite element method. And the reason for that is that, one, we've worked on these methods for a very long time. So therefore, they can be efficiently implemented, but in particular, they're element-wise mass conservative. And we have a lot of theoretical work. In fact, there's a whole area of what we call multi-scale mixed finite element methods, where you can talk about mixed finite element methods, couple them on a subgrid scale and a larger scale. In fact, I'll have another slide just to say a few words about that. This fibronectin equation does not diffuse, so it's monobinodine. And so in the evolution equation for the sprout tip set, we're doing a tracking, a point-to-point tracking method, and we have algebraic conditions for checking for sprout branching, geometric conditions checking for anastomosis, and a trajectory equation for the position of an individual sprout tip. So that's sort of the... So here is where we have...
I ask a quick question about the previous slide. So when you say, what does the conforming mesh mean? Like, what does it conform?
Conforming mesh means that you have vertices match up, conforming grids. There are other techniques that I actually think might work better for this, namely discontinuous Galerkin methods, but that allow you to have non-matching grids, which are very useful for certain applications. But here, basically, we're just saying you can use triangles. I mean, you could use any finite element spaces triangulation that you could want to do. Yes?
What are the initial boundary conditions on your CGF?
Well, you're going to have an initial concentration. You're going to have an initial concentration.
All throughout the matrix you have? Or?
The boundary conditions, it depends on what we use for the numerical simulation. If I use the vessel on one side only, then I will have no flow on the other three boundaries, and the vessel is an absorption boundary.
Yeah, you can have very general boundary conditions with these mixed methods. So here is a four-parent vessel, and so you have parents on all four sides, and you see the the capillary network moving in. Here is at a later time, and you can see. And then here is a, what is this? Just a minute. Oh, this is what we also, here is another case where we were looking at the effects of heterogeneity and also the medium being anisotropic. And so here is this parent vessel here, and here is looking at various cases of high heterogeneity for the tensor. I think this is XX, XY, YY. And so for the high heterogeneous conductivity, one, again, this plays a role, and you can see again, it changes things from the model problem. Here is when you have a highly anisotropic case, again, So this is looking at varying this conductivity tensor. And what is interesting is the anisotropic really changes a lot of the direction. You can really see this plays a role. So there seems to us the anisotropic is much more important than the heterogeneity. Thank you.
I have been advocating that for years. That matrix is a bed spring of protein. And to look at it as a homogeneous medium is not correct.
Well, I have never, I mean, like I say, I come from porous media, and I do not believe in anything being homogeneous. So.
I'll show movies tomorrow that show the position fate of extracellular matrix molecules in an embryo. And it's anything but it's homogeneous. It's completely, it's not homogeneous.
Yeah, well, that's great too. So in here, another thing that I would say the weakness or one of the areas that we really need to spend more time, and Mandry has done a lot of research in this area, and this is in cell cycle time. And so clearly, if we double the cell cycle time, and we have basically, some of the functionalities that we use are really come from experimental results that they have done at MD Anderson. So we're not just pulling out these numbers out of the thin air. I mean, this is, I think, one of the reasons in our giving this joint presentation is that it really involves people that are going to focus on some of the numerical simulation work and some that are going to be able to work to try to get some of the data and also to come up with what are the critical units and what is the critical, some of the values that you use. So here, cell cycle time, if we have it, you have a lot different picture than if you double the cell cycle time.
Excuse me, can you wait there?
Sure.
I want to mention something here. Back to why we started is to get breast getting circulation. The way we can think of is changing the cells, endothelial cells, how fast it would, you know, you think of why can't you get something going to get all the capillaries growing fast. So the first thing that comes to mind is can't you make the cells proliferate faster? Okay. So this test tells us if you proliferate faster, you're quite sparse. Whereas if you are, so then you may not be supplying the nutrients to every plant. But if you have the cell cycle time double, you're slow progressing, but you will supply the nutrients better. So it tells us, the biologist, that it has to be a condition in between.
You can't do both things at once.
Yeah.
All right, here is another one. Here is with no diffusivity, and here's with diffusivity. I mean, I think it would be really nice, and maybe some of you could provide us with, say, this diffusivity or this, I think of it as a dispersion from, because it's the background that I come from, but it could depend on the CGF. But anyhow, you can see by changing this, by having, this is without virtually no diffusion, and this is with diffusion, and you can see that there is a big difference. But it would be interesting to see what are the effects with putting in really a dispersion where you do have it not be constant, but it does suspend spatially. Pardon me? Well, it's virtually zero.
The D we started with 10 to the minus 9 in the first slides you saw.
Right.
So this is 10 orders both ways.
Right.
Close to.
We should have put the other slide back on here.
But did you need to resolve that? What if you use the 10 centimeters squared per second?
The growth factor.
The growth factor.
10 centimeters squared per second.
We just put up extreme levels to see the differences. This is numerical scale.
We're just showing with the model. The model is very robust. If it be put,
You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
No. I don't like to see that. I really find that.
Between otherwise, people don't react.
The whole idea. The whole. Pardon me.
What's the size of your time cell?
I don't know.
What is it? What's it?
consumption, parameter that you see, there's not a lot of difference when, for example, by the consumption parameter doesn't really affect things as much, say, as the diffusion. I mean, all of this basically was to try to understand a sensitivity, and we took some model, here's a model, and then we varied parameters to see what was the sensitivity in a sort of a rough way, trying to understand the effects. Here, we have a case where you have the extracellular matrix, and here you have the circular tumor colony. And so here you can see that it's going, if you go back a second, here it is the circular tumor, here's the ECM, and you can see the effects induced by having that tumor at different times. And then here is a case where you did a Lyme tumor induced angiogenesis. So here's a parent vessel, here's a Lyme tumor colony. And so you see this again. This is at different release rates of 0.1, 1, 10, and 100, etc. And here is at different time steps, going up to 250. And here is another circular tumor-induced angiogenesis, another form. See that it's again, 100, 150, 200, 250. Again, in different release rates. All right, now, I want to say a few words about this mixed finite element method, and I want to say a few words about the analysis of the of this model. I went over a little bit about this, but why mixed methods? Because, well, I'm here for elliptic problems, but this is a parabolic problem. You have a diffusion. It's locally conservative. You get accurate velocities the same order as a scalar variable. And you can treat, for example, if it's you're doing a pressure, if it's an elliptic equation, you normally are solving for a pressure. But if it's a diffusion, this would be a concentration. So you could actually have piecewise constants if you wish. You can treat rough coefficients. And in particular, we have developed really very fast solvers, even in the case of multi-phase flow. Let's say the following. We can solve, four million unknowns for multi-phase flow in 29 minutes. Cluster, it's all fully parallel. And we've done biogeomechanics. These are latter all 3D. This is the only 2D calculations I've done in a long time. But we didn't understand. But let me point out some beautiful features about these mixed methods. One, they come in, you know, the methods, the whole mixed finite element methods, certainly in the petroleum engineering literature, these are often referred to as cell-centered finite difference methods because you're using very low-order methods and you're doing special numerical quadratures. If you go to Los Alamos and you talk to people about mimetic finite difference methods, these are mixed methods with special quadrature. There are also a whole collection of methods called multipoint flux methods, which have very nice because one is much more interested in doing different geometries. And these are a whole new area. And part of the nice feature about this is that the scalar unknown, when you're like if you were doing the concentration and you were wanting to look at many different CGF factors, you may not want to have really higher order approximations for the concentration, but you might want to have just one per element. And these are really very nice because of the fact that you do have local mass conservation, which is really important when you're doing chemistry. There are other ways too, what are nice ways of doing, like in convergence, there are lots of work has been done on a priori error estimates, In other words, convergence depending upon what mixed spaces you're using. A posteriori, in fact, this is one of the things I think would really be useful in these models. In these a posteriori estimates, we actually have ways of computing residuals that give you upper and lower bounds on your computations, which tell you, or is that grid accurate enough for the model that you're trying to solve? And so these, there are some very nice results, I think, here. Also, a lot of times one would like to choose your grid based on some functional. Why are you trying to do that computation? And there are convergence results based on these target functionals. Another more recent result is that these mixed methods can be viewed with the use of mortar. If you have apply mortar methods, mortar mixed finite element methods. These are like breaking the problem up into subdomains that you can actually talk about two scale processes here. You can talk about a scale over a subdomain and then a subgrid scale. And then again, mesh can be structured or non-structured. But there's a whole theory of mixed finite element methods, and in particular, here are just some names of people that have worked on some of these different spaces. But here, and also some of the convergence and also superconvergence. If you look at some of these dates, you can see that I've worked on them a heck of a long time. Anyway, this is just to say that, let me just comment that in, just to tell you a little bit about what you're doing. In a single phase flow model, if you were solving U is minus K gradient of P, del dot U equal to F, then basically what one does is you multiply by K inverse times U, and you enter, this is an L2 inner product, and you integrate by parts. And so basically you're looking for a weak solution for both U, for the both velocity and P. But they do have lots of nice properties, and so I won't go through that. All right, so basically two things. We looked at this. And if you make certain assumptions on cell averaging, and also if you make certain assumptions in your model on branching, one needs a certain regularity. But basically, it is doing some averaging. Then the model that I've just described, one has a convergence proof that it does converge. In fact, basically, one gets an estimate both for concentration, the fluxes, and in terms of this optimal rates of convergence. And so similarly, and this is your, and you can also get similar results in terms of the fully discrete systems. And so for any of you that are interested, in fact, more details on this, you were asking about grids and things like this, which I can't remember, is that you can, this is going to appear in Science Journal of Multiscale Modeling and Simulation. You can find proofs of this and more details of these simulations. And let me conclude here. We have a deterministic two-scale modeling of growth factor-induced angiogenesis. We do time accumulation, diffusion, production, consumption, decay, cell proliferation, extension, sprout branching, anastomosis. Anyhow, the advantages of this approach is that at least it allows us to get a handle on applying some of the modeling. The deterministic modeling, such as I just indicated to you, a posteriori error estimates, and using some of the methodology that have been developed elsewhere. Two concepts here, this capillary indicator function and the conductivity. One, so we have in this computational efficiency, these mixed finite element methods work quite well, and have been, we put a lot of effort for many years in solvers. And in time integration, some can be implicit or Euler. And so anyhow, here what we see is our dendritic structure and pattern seems to be similar to what we people observe in vivo. Non-uniform invading front of capillary networks, backward angiogenesis has been observed in our simulation. Branching and extension are not significantly affected by geometries, and diffusivity we saw had a large effect. Mandry is going to say a few other words about some of the future work, but I wanted to point out here too an area that I think is, you know, is the effect of incorporating uncertainty. And so a lot of times what is happening in porous media is to do what they call, people have looked for years at doing Monte Carlo simulation on hydraulic conductivities. More recently, people are looking at doing what they call polynomial chaos, or they look at these KL-type expansions. So in some sense, that could be certainly one thing. What's the effect? But again, these are just some comments about one including stochastic parameters. Now I will get for Mandry to, she has a couple of comments on here on what we're hoping to put into the model. It's impossible to do this when you can't see. Gosh, where is this thing? Oh, there is the mouse. Okay. Well, maybe we'll let you do it since you're there. Here is your. No, here. That one. Click. No, but that's the one you want. And if you put it.
This is what we are trying to do with those in vivo models we have, where we can control the extracellular matrix. So first of all, we will extend this to three spatial dimensions, which is halfway down, isn't it, Mary? At your place, yeah. And incorporation of oxygen as a metabolic driver. The model is done, but we are not publishing it till we get a grant. modeling cyclin regulation of cell cycle. That means all the cell cycle regulated proteins, how, because we are going in cellular level, so we can introduce that molecular level into that cellular level. Especially we will look into signal transduction pathway and the cell cycle progression proteins in that. And further we will, as she mentioned before, we will add more angiogenic factors where we can easily, by the way, the diffusion can be found by those experiments. Mm-hmm. But we have to go one by one and find each one's diffusive coefficient, and then we can go back here. And also, anti-angiogenic factors, and one thing is missing here, the degradation of the extracellular matrix, that we will put in. And then, of course, experimental validation is what is the biggest thing, but I'm pretty sure we won't be able to do a very quantitative validation. It would be pretty much a qualitative validation, but to some extent, you know, if I have a heavy dense, twice the density versus four times the density, and have that pack into two layers, then I can look at how the structure has changed and look at the computation and look at the qualitative behavior. So we can do that kind of thing. And tissue engineering constructs, rat skin grafts, those are the ones we are looking at. We already have some of it, because it's like when we cut an image and it's a huge amount of data that we have, so we are struggling now at the moment of how we can incorporate into getting some kind of information for our models. Yeah, so I think that's it, isn't it, Mary? And of course, branch points, possible measurements of these branch points we can do,
and length of the vessel loops, whether there's average, those things we can do after rendering to a 3D face. And that was Mary's slide. So I stop here and take your questions, and thank you for your attention.